You're now listening to The Festival of Football, presented by Billy Harvey and Henry Barrett.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Festival of Football podcast. Today is episode 5, and we're going to be talking about 3 topics indeed. And on these 3 topics, we're going to be speaking about Manchester City finally being announced and winning the league, the champions. Briefly in that, we're going to be mentioning, what Man United did. Should they be punished for fielding the weakened team that they put out? On top of that, we're also then going to be talking about the weekend's fixtures, previewing them games, seeing if we can, dissect any upsets maybe, particularly Newcastle Man City game. And then finally, we're going to be talking about VAR, VAR, how it's ruining football, what our opinions on it are, if it works, if it don't work, and basically so in the general chit-chat. So, yeah, we'll start off with talking about Man City winning the league. Finally been announced after Man United's shit show last night, should I say. It was always going to happen, wasn't it? Man City was always going to win the league. It was just eventually going to... When was it going to be announced? When was it going to finally be? Yeah, confirmed, all well and good. So what's your thoughts on Man City finally winning the league last night without playing?
Yeah, it was inevitable, wasn't it? Even though they lost against Chelsea, it was only a matter of time. Man United wasn't going to win all those games. City wasn't going to drop any more points if you look at the running they had. And they've been the best team this season by far. They've been the most consistent team. They've kind of shown everyone why they've been Premier League champions 3 times out of the last 4 years. Very unlucky last season not to win it too. And again, they've dominated the Premier League and they'll continue to dominate it until Pep goes, to be honest. They've got the best squad. They've got the most amount of money. They've got the best coach in world football. There isn't really much else you can say about them. They're just consistently good.
Yeah, I mean, some of the games you've seen them play this year. I don't think, though, like this is... People are saying like this is like one of the best City teams. I don't think it is. I think the team with like David Silva and all that in it, I think they won it a different way this year. Normally they win it, styling, profiling, like Ric Flair.
Yeah.
I don't think they did it this year. I remember, I think after the first 8 games, they were 11th in the league, mate. So it's like they turn it around, but then it just goes to show you how shit the rest of the league was. They, after 8 games, they were 11th and they're able to win it by the margin that they've won it. It just tells you how bad it is. But yeah, I mean, fair play to them. They deserve it at the end of the day. They've been the best team in the league. And yeah, does it make Liverpool the worst champions ever?
No. You got to look back at that Blackburn team that won the league and then sold their best players and then, fell apart the next season. I think that's the worst defending champions. I think Liverpool are not quite as bad as that. There's some similarities there, but I think, yeah, Blackburn have got to be the worst defending champions. Them or Leicester.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think Man United did everything possible last night to give City the title, which was surprising to me. And just getting into that, I mean, I don't personally understand what Man United were doing, because I get that you've got to play so many games in such a short period. But then I was looking at, like, at Christmas time. You play Boxing Day, then you normally play the 28th. It's always like a 2-day window there. But you don't normally see like that many changes then. And it's like, there's so many factors to it. And this is what's fascinating about it. It's like, they chose to rest against Leicester to play their first team against Liverpool. So isn't that somewhere like breaking a rule somewhere that you're choosing to play your better team against Liverpool because they're your rivals than Leicester that are not? Isn't there some kind of like dodginess there in some way? Like, come on, you can't. It's like West Ham saying, "Oh, you know what? We've got Millwall coming up, and then we're playing Charlton. We're resting against Charlton because we want to do Millwall over." That's not sportsmanship. That's not playing fairly for the rest of the league, is it?
Well, yeah. There's 2 sides to every story, and I think as the manager, you should pick whatever team you want to. And to be fair, Man United knew they wasn't going to win the title, so the league is over for them. So they could, in theory, play a weakened team the rest of the season and rest their players for the Europa League final, which is what I would do. They're going to finish top four.
And there's playing a weakened team, and then there's playing the team they played last night. They knew by doing that they were going to lose, which gives Leicester 3 points, which makes it impossible, near enough impossible for Liverpool to get top four. But what everyone's forgetting is what we spoke about on the last pod, is you can get Champions League if you finish in the top five. Why are people not understanding this? So Liverpool only need to finish fifth. And they're going to, Liverpool will finish fifth now. Because I think Leicester probably won't win the next two games. At best, they'll get a point. West Ham have to win all three games to try and finish above Leicester. I think Liverpool will batter Man United tomorrow night. And then I think it will just be, it'll be the way the teams are at the minute. I think Chelsea might go above Leicester. And then Liverpool will be fifth. And then I'm hoping West Ham sixth. Because if we finish seventh, then even if we're in this conference thing, I'm not going to be happy about it, mate, to be honest.
But I think what Man United have done is, I think, you know, people will say, you know, they've played a weakened team, but there's always a flip side. They're playing the young players. They're giving them, they're blooding in the young players. So there's two sides to every story, isn't there?
They were blooding in young players. They knew exactly what they were doing. Man United fans cost that game to be cancelled, to be postponed. So now Man United have put themselves in that situation. Their fans have put themselves in that situation. Not Liverpool fans, not West Ham fans, not Tottenham fans. So why did Man United have the balls to say, oh, we're going to play a lesser team because the Premier League are making us play this many games? It was their own fans that got the game cancelled. Just because their season's over doesn't mean you can then rest players for other teams. And it's so convenient now. Like when Wolves did it all them years ago against Man United, they got fined. But now we're talking about Man United. It's, oh, the rules have been changed years ago.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
I think as a manager, whether it's a weakened team that you play or your strongest team, you should be able to pick whatever team you want without fear of reprisal. Because you're managing the team at the end of the day, like, you know, win or lose, it's going to affect your career. Okay, yeah, it has ramifications on the rest of the league. But if they want to play a weakened team and they want to play the kids, the reserves, whoever they want to play, it's down to him. If he wants to do it, he can do it. And yeah.
But mate, it's borderline cheating.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, if they've won that game.
There's a thin line between doing that and cheating. Why is it okay for him to rest against Leicester, play this team against Leicester, but then play big boys against Liverpool? How is that fair to Liverpool? It's not. And that's why I'm saying the sportsmanship and the fairness of the game has been basically thrown out the window. And if he plays a strong team against Liverpool, their season's over. Why are they playing a big team against Liverpool? Because it's Liverpool and Man United don't like Liverpool. That's where I think Liverpool fans have the right to be angry. As a West Ham fan, I feel like I have a right to be angry because they let Leicester win that game last night. Simple as that.
I think fans do, but I think the thing you've got to remember is no one was saying this when Man United played the kids in the Europa League, then played the Premier League the next week. It's just convenient for people to say now.
The Europa League only affected Man United. If Man United got themselves knocked out of the Europa League, that's down to them. You know, it's like... Yeah, but... It's like when Sheffield United, remember when we're talking about the last pod when West Ham stayed up with Tevez? Neil Warnock went into that game. He thought Man United were going to beat us. And then he rested players to let Wigan win so that we would go down. Otherwise, if Sheffield United beat Wigan, Wigan got relegated or something like that. And then they got beat by Wigan, but we beat Man United. So then Neil Warnock was then pissed off at Man United because we beat them. But at the end of the day, they played their full team. Man United played their full team. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest with you, like, one game in a season doesn't mean that much. I think if you're not good enough over the course of the season to finish where you need to finish, you can't blame Man United for playing a weakened team because you didn't finish there.
No, I get that. My argument is it's not to do with them playing a weaker team against Leicester. It's to do with the fact why they've done it and they're going to play a strong team against Liverpool. I think that's the unfair thing. I want them to beat Liverpool because then it keeps Liverpool below West Ham. But I think the unfairness in it of where you're going to choose, oh, we'll play a lesser team against Leicester, but we'll put our big boys in against Liverpool because that's the bigger game. Like, I get it's a rivalry and stuff, but that's not fair. And I think that's why they need to be sanctioned for it. That's why there needs to be punishment because you can't choose that Leicester's a better game to put the young kids in. Why is that fair? If Man United's playing for something, then fair enough. But as you said out of your own mouth, like, the games are done for them. They've got nothing to play for anymore. Why rest against Leicester, not Liverpool? Why is one easier to rest than the other? You can say it's the rivalry and whatever, but that's not fair.
They might not play a strong team against Liverpool. I mean, it's likely that they will, but they might not. I mean, he might just go, you know.
They're playing again next Tuesday.
Yeah, but so he might say, look, you know, the Premier League's over for us. We can't win it. We've got Champions League football. We've got an Europa League final coming up. I'm going to rest players because I want them to be at their sharpest, give them a few games off, or maybe they play 45 minutes or something. Yeah, to be honest with you.
If you give them all that time off, they won't be at the sharpest.
No, but the thing is, for me, like, I can see where Ollie's coming from. It's his first final, and he needs to win a trophy, because if he doesn't win a trophy this season, he's probably going to get hurt.
But that's not why he rested them, mate. It's not going to have to do with the Europa League.
That's what I think.
But when they played Villa, why didn't he rest players against Villa, knowing that he was playing Leicester and Liverpool? Why didn't he rest players against Villa? It was because he didn't want to beat Leicester, because then it allowed Liverpool the chance to get top four.
Yeah, even if it is that, it's great, because, like, as if it was me, if that was Tottenham and Arsenal situation, I'd put the under-fives out and let whoever smash us 9-0 if Arsenal couldn't get Champions League football. I wouldn't care. I'd be like, yeah, we did it. Give us the £50,000 fine. What's that? Drop in the ocean, nothing. Thanks. Like, I get it. It's
complete. Production, mate.
Well, they should get a points deduction for cancelling a Liverpool game anyway. But they won't. They won't, because whatever they give them, it's like we've said before, if they give them a points deduction, it's never been done before. So they'll go to the European Court for Sport for arbitration and say, we're being picked on, it's unfair, you know, nothing like this happened before, we haven't even been given a warning for it. And they'll just go, yeah, you're right, Premier League, you can't do that. Sorry, you have to issue them a warning, give them a fine, and then that's it, and we move on. So I don't think there's going to be any, as much as I think they should have a points deduction, I don't think legally they can do much.
Yeah, well,
It's a shame because it'd be great if Man United got a 25-point deduction, wouldn't it? It'd be amazing, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, they'll be out of the Champions League then.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, they would be, but...
I just find it so, like, so hypocritical of these Man United fans that the other week they were like, oh, we've all got to come together for this ESL. We've all got to stay united so we don't allow these rich owners to take over the clubs and take our great clubs into these blah, blah, blah. But then now they're saying, oh, don't blame us for you not getting top four. And it's not our fault we've got to play this many games. No, it is your fault, because you were single-minded and only thought about your own club getting the game postponed, that now you had to play so many games so quick together, and then your manager's put out this crap team for no reason when he could have played a strong team for 60 minutes, then took off three of his best players, and then they could have played again on Thursday.
Yeah.
But no, he didn't want to do that because he wanted to do Liverpool in. And then it's convenient now because Man United fans are all happy that they've done Liverpool in. They want to do one. But before, it was like, oh, let's all come together and all this. No, fairness of the game and all this. That went against fairness of the game. And that's why I think they should be punished, because they chose to do it against Leicester, not Liverpool. For me, that says they wanted to do it to fuck Liverpool up. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and they probably did. You're probably right, but I think, you know, football fans are fickle, aren't they? So, you know, one thing. No. I mean, it's like when you hear
all the news,
football fans got the ESL cancelled. No, they didn't. They didn't. Like, football fans protesting meant nothing. Like, that's not why the clubs pulled out of it. It's all nonsense. It's because UEFA have now decided they're going to revamp the Champions League. And then it all went away, and you think, is that what they wanted in the first place? It's not football fans.
Well, I think the reason why the English teams pulled out is because the government got involved.
It's not even that. I don't think it's that. I think
as soon as the government got involved, mate, that's when they all pulled out. Because when they were talking about UEFA were talking about sanctions and all this rubbish on Sunday night, they all were adamant they were joining. They were still doing it. The moment Boris Johnson come out and said, no, this is not going to happen, and we'll do whatever it takes legally to stop them, they then changed their tune. I agree, it had nothing to do with the fans. And
Nothing at
it
all.
It's a political move to be like, oh, we did it for the fans, because it makes the fans all hush-hush.
Yeah.
And you see, like, the Arsenal fans, they did a protest the other night, and I saw this fan on Arsenal Fan TV, and he said, I had to leave. He's like, why'd you leave? Because no one was there. No one's turned up for it. But
yeah, it is what it is. And then going back to Man United, like, you know, we know Man United fans are special. We've had them on social, like, with their narrow-minded views. And, you know, it'll be, you know, if they do get a fine or something, oh, everyone's picking on United. Like, oh, bugger off. Like, you know, just accept the fact that what you've done, you've done it, like you said, probably to annoy Liverpool, like, to make them not qualify for the Champions League and all that. And just...
Hey, Man United fans are probably angry that the Champions League final potentially could be moved to London, when if the Europa League one was moved to London, it'd be right on their doorstep for most Man United fans.
It's true. Yeah, but then, you know, they're playing a Spanish team, so...
How many Man United fans are in in Manchester?
Probably not many.
Just over half, probably.
Yeah. I mean, most of their fans, like we said, are overseas, aren't they? But, you know, that's another discussion.
It really is. But congratulations to the City. They deserve to win the title. And, yeah, I think it'll be the same next year, mate. It all depends on how long Pep wants to be there for.
It does. And I think, like you said, City have made some really good transfers. Like, he's now sorted out the defence. He's got Ruben Diaz in. They've got Kyle Walker. They've got Laporte. Who's going to play for Spain?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Crazy. Crazy how France...
Controversial, man. He's French. How can he play for Spain?
Well, he comes...
Because he was at Madrid for a little while, wasn't he? Atletico Madrid.
No, he was at Atletico Bilbao, so he's Basque. So he comes from that region where it's like there's like a French and Spanish border, and he could play for either one. And France haven't called him up. So I don't know why France haven't called him up. He's 10 times better than any centre back they've got.
Has he never played for France then?
No, he's never even been called up.
Wow. That's
crazy. That's a big loss for them. Yeah, huge loss. Massive loss. And yeah, and if Pep does stay for another few years, I think if Man City win the Champions League, and this is going to be a bold shout, he might go on a sabbatical again, because he's won everything with Man City. He might stay to win the World Club Cup and say, you know, I've won literally everything with City. And then,
yeah, I think he'll stay one more year, regardless of what happens. If he wins the Champions League, I think he'll stay for another year. Because, I mean, he had that big loss in his life, wasn't it? His mum died this season or something. And I think that affected him. And then after, you know, slowly, he probably come to terms with that. That's when he just banged out this epic run that Man City have gone on and done, mate. I mean, they've done bits, so fair play to them.
Yeah, fair play to them. They've been the best team in the league. They've got the best squad, the best budgets, the best coaching, the best manager.
And for all these people saying that they've bought the league and all this shit, just stop being envious, man. Because if your club, if some prince come into your club and bought it, if a country bought your club and was throwing money at players and all that, you won't be saying shit.
No, they wouldn't. So, no one says it. Like, we look at Premier League champions throughout history. Everyone's bought the league. Blackburn did it in 95 when they spent huge amounts of money.
Blackburn, Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think maybe the only club that probably didn't buy the league was Arsenal, maybe.
No, they did. They spent huge money. Leicester. Leicester spent next to nothing and they won it. I think they're the only club that you can't really say hadn't spent huge, huge money and won the league. They spent next to nothing and they went on that run, didn't they? And they won it. Even Man United's sides in the golden eras, they spent huge amounts of money on players like Berbatov, Tevez, Ferdinand, Vidic.
Well, technically, they didn't really spend any money on Tevez because he was always dodgy deals, weren't they?
Well, yeah, no one knows about those financial deals. But, I mean, they spent big money on players like Ferdinand, Barthez, Berbatov, Van Nistelrooy. Like, the list goes on and on. And, you know,
there's an overrated keeper there.
Barthez. Quality goalkeeper, a bit eccentric, but
mate, he was overrated. What do you mean quality?
Nah, he's an awesome goalkeeper. He's got to be one of the best goalkeepers of all time, surely.
I always remember when West Ham played the FA Cup against Man United, and Di Canio went through on goal, and he thought he was offside, so he just stood there with his hand up, like, "Oh, he's offside!" And Di Canio sit in, and then he started running. Brilliant.
Yeah, he was a bit nutty, wasn't he? But he was a great keeper.
Yeah, well, it is what it is, mate. So we'll move on to previewing the weekend games. So if you run through the list and we'll give our score prediction and see who gets the most scores right.
Yeah, so let's start with the, well, so what are we now? Wednesday. Tonight we've got Chelsea Arsenal. We you know, who's going to win that game? Probably Chelsea, probably 2-1. But yeah, we'll start with the Friday game. So we'll go Newcastle Man City. For me, that's a Man City win, 2-0, easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dead game, isn't it? It's nothing to play for now. Newcastle's safe. Man City's won the league. Man City probably will start messing with the team now because obviously he's got Champions League to think about. Part of me is thinking maybe it'll be like a 2-2 because I can just see Newcastle scoring. But I'll go 2-1 City because I definitely think Newcastle will score.
Yeah, for sure. And then we've got Burnley Leeds. For me, Leeds, that's a 3-1 win. Leeds are a solid team.
They let themselves down, though. They let themselves down against these little teams like Burnley.
They do.
I'm going to go for Burnley 1-0 win.
Okay. And then we've got Southampton Fulham. Southampton 1-0. Fulham are down. Southampton have nothing to play for.
No, I think Southampton are just a riot. You know, you've got Danny Ings back now. So I say 3-0 Saints.
Cool. Then you got Brighton West Ham.
Brighton West Ham, well, it's a big game for West Ham. Big, big game. We need to win all three games to have any chance of getting top four. But as I said earlier on, we can get top five and that will get us Champions League. I looked into it the other day. They were saying that if someone from England wins the Champions League, then there's up to five places that can be in Europe, in Champions League.
Nice.
Apparently, that seven teams from England can be in Europe altogether. So I'm still a bit confused, though, because like when I'm looking at it, I think if West Ham finish fifth, Man City win the league, that means the Champions League place goes to them. Mm-hmm. Then does that mean seventh doesn't get the conference thing anymore and then sixth get it?
No, I think...
Because if fifth gets Champions League, then sixth will get Europa League and then seventh will get the conference. Yeah, that makes seven teams. So that's it. Yeah, so fifth will get it. Fifth will definitely get it. So, I mean, we've got a chance of finishing fifth. I think it all depends on Liverpool's game tomorrow night against Man United. Mm-hmm. If Man United win it, then I can see us getting it because I can see us getting at least 7 points from the next three games. And, yeah, is it a point or 2 points above Liverpool? So I think Liverpool would have to win all their games. So it's going to be a tight finish, mate. I don't think Tottenham are in it anymore. I mean, if Tottenham finish above West Ham, then West Ham have completely blown it. So going into the Brighton game, Brighton is our bogey team, the worst bogey team that we have. We have not beaten them since they've come up in the Prem. The best we've done is get a point against them. And I think we're going to get a point again. So I think we're going to go for a 1-1. You know, we're lacking in midfield. They keep showing all these things about Declan Rice. Like, oh, he's doing all these different things. He's on the grass. He's running around. He's doing this and all that. But then he's never being picked. He's not even on the bench. So it just makes me feel like he's not going to be fit. And like, it's all about the Euros. So, yeah, I don't know. If Rice is in the team, we've got a chance of winning. But if not, I'll go for a point. So I'll go 1-1.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that sounds about right. I think for me, I'm going to go for a Brighton win. I think they'll beat you 1-0. I just think, like you said, you've not really beat them. They're a good team. They play good football at home. They're playing under no pressure. They're safe. And yeah, I just think from what I saw from the last game of West Ham, you didn't look great. So I'm going to go for a Brighton win.
The last time you predicted a B team to beat West Ham 1-0, was Burnley, and you beat them 3-1, so I'll take it, mate. I'll take it.
Yep.
What's next?
So we've got Palace against Villa. For me, that's just one of those games, 12 o'clock on a Sunday, that no one's going to be watching. So I'm going to go 1-1. There's nothing on that game. Both teams are safe. Both teams got nothing to play for. Bang average teams. So, yeah.
I think Grealish might be back. So if he's back, then Villa will win. I want to go 2-0 Villa. Just for the bands, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and then we've got Spurs Wolves. For me, I'm so pessimistic as a Spurs fan, as you know. So I'm going to go for a Wolves 1-0 win. And it's going to be... Yeah, Wolves win. I'm going for a Wolves win, and I don't think we've got the like I've said many times, the manager in charge to, you know, he's never come up against a tactician like Nuno before. They've got some really good players, Wolves. They know what they're doing as a team. They're well organized. They're difficult to beat. They're a tough, tough team. And I just can't see, like, I think Tottenham players have packed their bags in and the season's done for them. They think, you know, if we finish 5-4-6, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, I know what you mean. I'm at that point now where I don't know what Tottenham's going to turn up. I don't know what Wolves is going to turn up, because Wolves have been indifferent this year. Tottenham at home.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I can see Harry Kane scoring. It's going to be a tough game either way. I mean, Wolves on their day, I think, can beat anyone in the league. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. But I would side more towards a Tottenham win, but I'll go 1-1.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. And then we've got West Brom, Liverpool. Liverpool 4-0. I mean, West Brom are down.
See, I was thinking about this, and this is what I was telling you in the other podcast. Soon as a team's relegated, the pressure's off. West Brom's at home. Liverpool have been struggling away from home all season, and at home, to be fair. You know, they went to Villa and they lost 7-2.
Uh-huh.
Right? West Brom have got a good... As much as they've been rubbish, they've got a good... On their day, they've got a good little strike combination. You've got Pereira. You've got what's his name? The striker.
Yeah, I know you mean. Is it Diagne or something his name is?
Yeah, Dieng or everything.
Dieng or something.
Yeah, he and his day can score a few goals. And I think against Liverpool's defence, he's going to be something that Liverpool can't handle. Because, like, they've not got, as you know, you've not got Van Dijk, they've got Matic, they've not got Gomez, they've got the young lads at the back. And you put them under pressure, it teeters, you know. And if Mo Salah and Mane and all that, they have them off days again, like they've been having all season. I don't know, I can see West Brom getting something out of the game. I'll safe bet go Liverpool 2-0, but, mate, if I had some money, I'd put a West Brom win, just because I've got a weird feeling. I can see West Brom doing something, which would be great, but maybe that's my heart wanting it because of West Ham over me head, but yeah, it is what it is.
Okay, sure. No, that makes sense. I get that. I can see where you're coming from. And then you've got Everton and Sheffield United. For me, it's an Everton win. It's a 2-0 Everton win. Sheffield United, nothing to play for. Probably one of the worst teams I've ever seen in Premier League history. I mean, them and Derby, yeah. You know, I know they got more points than the Derby team did years ago, but it was that...
England.
Yeah, I mean, it was that case for Sheffield United, wasn't it? Second season syndrome, and they did so well in the first season. And then it lured you into that false sense of security as a manager that you think that these players can do it again next season. And they wasn't good enough. They didn't make the right signings, and then they are where they are. And this is what happened.
Yeah, but mate, they got a big injury to key players. You know, they lost O'Connor, who was big for them last year. They lost Egan at times this season. They lost the Norwegian kid. What's his name? Berg?
Sander Berger.
Sander Berger. Yeah, they lost him. And like, everyone raves about him. Like, they want him. Man City have talked about wanting him. So, you know, you lose all these players, any team's going to struggle. Like, that's why West Ham's been struggling recently, because they've lost all the key players at the wrong time. So, it happens, but you just have to be stronger. But they just, yeah, they didn't have it.
Uh-huh.
And when the owner's falling out with the manager, that's sort of shit's going to happen. It's obviously going to be an Everton win. Everton's at home, right?
Yep.
Well, Everton's been poor at home, mate. Yeah, anyone else, I'd be saying, yeah, but that's like a rubbish this year, so I'll say Everton will win that. I just hope that Everton don't win tomorrow night against Villa, because that's a big game.
Yeah, they'll
be. They're going on the same points as West Ham, Everton, if they win tomorrow.
They put themselves right back in it if they can get the results going. So, I mean, the race is hot enough for European football, isn't it? And I think there's going to be someone big missing out. And to be honest with you, it's probably going to be Tottenham.
Yeah, but you said someone big. That's not big.
No, it is that thing. It's we've made the wrong choices at the wrong times. Transfers have been wrong. Managerial choices have been wrong. Caretaker's been completely wrong. It is what it is.
Okay, so we'll move on to the final section where we're going to be talking about VAR. Where to start? I mean, firstly, does it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's black and white, isn't it? I mean, if it's offside, it's offside, right? That's the premise of it. And let's not forget, fans were calling for this since that Lampard goal against Germany in the World Cup all those years ago. Now you've got it. You don't want it. It's going to be here. It's not going to go away. It's here forever. You're just going to have to accept it. And it works how it works. And as much as I don't like VAR in football because, you know, it doesn't have the same atmosphere when someone scores, but what we're seeing is teams are where they are supposed to be for it. I know there's been some decisions that have gone wrong.
The problem is, Bill, right, and what fans, I think, get annoyed about is it's not black and white. It's not. There's a hell of a lot of grey area, mate. There's a big chunk of grey. And the problem is because the referees are not consistent with it. They're not doing the same... Mm-hmm. They're not looking at the same particular game as they would if they were doing another game. They're judging it on opinions. And it can't be opinions. It has to be a set thing. So offside, yeah, fine. The offside they've got down to a T. If it's the arm, if it's, even though I don't agree with the sleeve or, you know, a toe, whatever, yeah, it's offside, fair enough. They've got that down. So we all know that that's why you see something called disallowed, because we know that's an official rule. When it comes down to opinion base, is where the red card West Ham had the other week, where Balbuena kicked the ball away, he's followed through, he's tread on the guy, red card. VAR looked at it, red card, right? The next day, they did the ref watch thing on Sky Sports and they were like, it was wrong, he shouldn't have been sent off. So why was he sent off? Because the referees on the day had that opinion. And that's where it's wrong. You can't have a game where the rules are based off opinions. Because if that's the case, you're going to get different outcomes. And so that's where, in my opinion, VAR works, but the referees that are handling it don't work.
No, they don't. I think for me, it's very much like the referees are scared. Like you, how many decisions have we seen this season been actually overturned? Not many. So like the on-field referee is very much, you know, whether something's said between the teams, like, you know, the referees, they've got this pact, you know, I'm the ref, I'll make the decisions. You can check VAR for obvious things, but if it's subjective or I'm going to stick with my decision and you have to back it. And it seems like that happens. Like, I remember I saw an interview, I can't remember what referee it was. Maybe it was like Dermot Gallagher or someone who was a ref years ago. And he was saying the same thing. And he was saying that a lot of the junior referees who are on VAR duty and say like Mike Dean is the official that day, they're scared to overturn him because someone like that has so much power within the referee's organization that he could ruin their career. Like, you know, if he makes a few mistakes on the pitch and VAR picks up on it, that's all Sky are going to be talking about. Sky or BT, they're going to pick up and go, oh, Mike Dean's made so many mistakes today. As soon as he comes off that pitch, he's going to be phoning that VAR official and being like, what are you doing? Like, you've made me look like an absolute idiot out there. Like, come on. Like, you know, back your own professionals. We get enough stick as it is.
Do you know what? Going back to what you said before about the way referees deal with it and stuff, I saw on, it's like when you're on social media, you get these video clips come up. And one of them was of an Australian referee and he was mic'd up and you could hear everything he was saying. So I can't believe it. Something happened in the game. It was a penalty, and they didn't know what to do. So he's talking to someone in his ear, and I don't actually think at the beginning he was talking to VAR. He was talking to his linesmen and stuff. And he goes, after about 2 or 3 minutes, he goes, do you know what? I don't know what to do. I'm going to sell it. Should I go to the monitor to sell it?
Yeah.
Right? That's what he says. Should I go to the monitor to sell it? Then he says, do you know what? Actually, no, I'm going to give it and then VAR can tell me if it's not a penalty or not, or something like that. It was a penalty or a red card or something. But them words, I'm going to go to the monitor to sell it when they've even don't even know what they're doing. That's why they don't mic them up in the Prem. Could you imagine if Mike Dean's running around like a twat going, oh yeah, ref, I'm a ref, red card for you being a twat. You know, you've seen videos of Mike Dean where he's like, Mike Dean doesn't like people in his space and he's just like, get out of my space. Yeah, like talk about the way players speak to refs. Refs probably speak to the players like shit as well. And I don't know. I think the refs need to change. And I think the only way you can change it is by getting ex-players in there where they've, you know, do it in a way where they're not going to be biased. So like putting, you know, I'm using Rio Ferdinand as an example. I'm not suggesting he should do it, but putting someone like Rio Ferdinand in the game where he's not going to be influencing the game that can help Man United, for example. So you could put him in a game where it's West Brom, Fulham, right? And he can sit in the VAR room and then when the referee's looking at it, saying, oh, this looks a bit conscious, they go, well, as a player, when that used to happen, I noticed this, and it gives the player's perspective. Because that red card that West Ham received the other week against Chelsea was never a red card. Because these referees have never played the game at that level anyway, they don't understand it. It was against physics. Where was he meant to put his foot?
Yeah.
It's just things like that. And I just think, yeah, like, VAR is good and we need it because it's helped clear up so many errors. You know, I mean, technology is not without a fault. You know, as we've talked about Sheffield United, Bournemouth game where Bournemouth's goal was given. Was it Sheffield United and Villa?
Yeah.
Where Sheffield United's goal wasn't given.
Yeah.
But Villa went over the line, it weren't given, whatever. And yeah, it's not without its faults. But if you've got people running the game that give different opinions based on who the referee is, it's going to be faulty. And then going on to what you said about goal celebrations. Like, as fans, the goal goes in, but we're like, oh, wait, we can't really celebrate. Oh, God, it is a goal. Oh, okay, it's a goal, yeah. And it takes away from that moment. Like, yes, but you can't because of that moment. It's gone.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it ruined it.
I watched Antonio do an interview on Monday Night Football, and he was talking to Thierry Henry and Jamie Carragher and stuff, and he was just saying, like, I don't do my dances anymore because I don't want to be like a fool when I'm celebrating, dancing, and then I get told it's ruled off because of an iron ball or something, because of VAR. And it's wrong, man. It takes away from the game. It takes away from everything. So I think, personally, you've got to weigh up the pros and cons. If you're going to keep VAR, you need to bring in ex-pros to help. That's going to be hard because of us biased and all that stuff, so you've got to figure that out. Or you need to weigh up, was it better before VAR? Is it better since VAR? And do a vote, you know, like in any democracy, they do a vote, don't they, you know, to make it fair. Do that with football fans. Football people, give a vote, because then people can say, no, I don't want VAR, because although we might have had goals given that was offside or whatever else, it wasn't as bad as what VAR is. And it gives people the chance. It gives people the choice. And I think that's what they should do.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, like, VAR, it's got its problems, isn't it? But I think the actual technology itself works. It's the human stuff behind it. So like we've mentioned with the referees, and it doesn't matter what you say. Referees still have bias when they go to big teams. Like, if you're Fulham and you're playing against Man United at Old Trafford, and there's, a slight knock on Rashford in the box, they're just going to give it, check it, and it's going to get given because they're intimidated by actually going to these big clubs. Because Alex Ferguson years ago mentioned that, you know, they would intimidate teams in the tunnel. So like Roy Keane would say, like, he would know that before the game, we had won the game because I'd look over at the other team and we knew we had them, sort of thing. And they did it to officials as well. And you can tell, like, it wasn't just intimidating the team, it was intimidating the officials as well, because they knew if they didn't give Fergie like a penalty when it was another penalty, he'd be straight in the dressing room afterwards, you know, calling all the names under the sun, you're not coming back to ref here again, and all this sort of stuff. And it still goes on now, and you can still see it goes on now. And with VAR, it's worse because you've got then that dynamic between refs that, oh, I can't upset my colleague, I can't go against my senior colleague, I can't do this and I can't do that. It's like at work, isn't it? If one of your senior like colleagues makes a mistake, you don't feel like you can pull them up on it, because at the end of the day, they might be the person that decides if you stay in your job or not. So it's like, what do you do?
I think that's why they need to get ex-pros in there, mate, because they won't give a crap who the referee is. They'll call them out on it. I mean, they need people like Gary Neville and stuff like that, the ones that are opinionated and speak out on things. Because until you get them in and you get that sort of regulation in, it's just going to keep getting worse, mate. You know, this handball rule, you know, we spoke about it in the last pod, how Man United got away with the penalty against Villa. It was because it was Man United. Any other team, and I can't believe they checked it and didn't give it. It's like, it doesn't make sense to me, mate. It really doesn't. And I mean, yeah, it is what it is. I think maybe use VAR for offsides and that's it. Because at the end of the day, you're not changing it anyway. I mean, a referee gives a red card. Oh, no, wait a minute. How often do you see, oh, wait a minute, it's not a red. Take the red away, give a yellow. Or like, how many times do you see a player being, oh, that's a penalty, blows for a penalty. Actually, no way, he dived.
Yeah.
Very rarely. Because even if it's a soft penalty, they give it. I remember a penalty involving Arsenal a few weeks ago where the guy, he barely stepped on the guy's foot, like barely just touched it. The player went down holding his foot. VAR penalty. And it's like, that was never a penalty before. But because VAR now are dissecting everything, they're giving miniature little connection as penalties, and you can't.
Yeah, and no, I agree. We saw it at the World Cup, didn't we, when there was a lot of decisions going and like referees were always going over to the monitor and it was like, oh my God, not again. Like, it just detracts from the game. Mm-hmm. I think for football, it doesn't work, in my opinion, in terms of like the flow of the game and the atmosphere. For things like rugby, yeah, it does, but then it's a different game. It, for me, like, yeah. it just ruins like the conversations afterwards as well. The conversation isn't about the game, it's now all about VAR.
Yeah.
Like,
I think if they're going to pursue with VAR, they need to mic up the refs. They need to start letting the fans know what's happening. Because that was the problem when they first came in. People didn't know what the hell was going on. They'd be sitting there like, 2-3 minutes, what's happening? Yep. No announcement, no nothing. Just it says at the beginning, penalty check. Well, no, have the microphones mic'd up. If you don't want to do it for the live crowd because it can, you know, generate, you know, aggression or whatever, do it for the TV at least. Because otherwise you're sitting there looking at a TV. You can the ones for me that are just beyond is like when you can clearly see it's offside. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm all the way near China, but they're saying, oh, let's have a look. And they draw the lines. You don't need to draw the line. You can clearly see he's blatantly offside. Yeah. I can see it from here. But you take 25 minutes drawing your little freaking lines and dots and crap. Oh, it infuriates me, mate.
Yeah, it's but pointless, isn't it? Like, yeah, what one that gets me is that there's this thing, right, where, you know, you could go up one end. You could score. Say like it was a slight touch on someone in the other box. They do a counter attack. They go up everyone and score. So VAR then reviews if there was a foul. So that goal could get chalked off, and then you could get a penalty against you, and then you could concede a goal.
I remember Portugal versus Switzerland. Switzerland were on the attack. Portuguese guy fouled the player, went down, no penalty given. Portugal broke up the other end. Fouled, Ronaldo was fouled, penalty. Ronaldo stands about to take a penalty kick. Guess what happens? Yeah. VAR. No, penalty down the other end. Ronaldo's like, what the fuck? It's brilliant. but that's good because it was a foul. It should have gone back. And that's what VAR needs to be used for, not these like stupid things. Like how you can have someone else looking at it and come to the same decision as a mistake. Is beyond me. It's absolutely beyond me. I mean, you've only just got to look at some of the VAR decisions. It's just ridiculous. Absolute ridiculous.
Crazy. But, you know, let's hope in the future that it will still be there. Let's be honest. It will never go, but hopefully they can improve it.
Yeah, well, hopefully, mate. Hopefully. It is what it is. You just want football to be good again, you know? When you can celebrate and know that it's a goal. I mean, so annoying. I mean, like, it used to be bad when you'd score and then after about 20 minutes the flag go up. Oh, it's offside.
Yeah.
But the thing that is me, you know, right? As we're talking about these little crappy fouls they give, you know, like barely touch the boot or whatever. It's like, what about when, like, I remember when Newcastle West Ham played. We got it back to 2-2 with 10 men. Newcastle whipping the cross. Richie rips it in. Wilson pushes Ogbonna in the back. Literally, he sees hands. Push Ogbonna in the back. He can't then get straight to Eddie. He might have got a flick on it. Off his little bald head. He might have got a flick on it. Which took it away from Willock. And he wouldn't have scored the third goal. But they didn't even check it. They didn't even check that it was a foul. I could see, biased or not, that if your hands are like that and they're extended into the player's back, so they're pushing out, that's a push. That's a foul. They didn't give it. But then you see these little idiotic things given. And it just annoys me. Like Bruno goes in and the defender blows on him and he falls. Oh, penalty! It is what it is, mate. It is what it is. Yeah, well, it's been good talking to you again, Bill. I'm glad that we got to do this again. And I hope everyone's been listening and watching. If you're watching on YouTube and enjoying the content, because we're enjoying making it, aren't we, Bill?
For sure, definitely.
Yeah. So let's see what's going to happen this weekend. I'm hoping that it's a good weekend for the Hammers, a bad weekend for the Spurs. Let's just hope that West Ham win, Spurs don't. And we can finish above Tottenham. Because if we finish above Tottenham, we've got European football. That's the worst scenario for me. We finish eighth, Tottenham finish seventh, Everton finish sixth, and whatever. I'll just be dying inside. I won't be able to handle it. But yeah, guys, please follow us on the socials. You should know them all by now. Festival Football. And if you do like what you're listening to, please share us around. Hopefully, you know, you can give us to your football friends and generate conversations between yourselves and conflict. I mean, if we say anything about your clubs, don't take it personally. It's just an opinion, you know, just an opinion. You know, you can say whatever you want about West Ham. Don't bother me. Just don't get personal. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, have your opinion about the club and the team. But yeah, when you're being personal or you're putting, like, you know, stereotypical abuse out there, it's pointless, isn't it?
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's just ridiculous. But hey, hate is going to hate, mate.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, then. Well, until the next one, it's a goodbye from me. It's a goodbye from Billy. And we'll see you on the next one.
See you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Festival of Football podcast, presented by Henry Barrett and Billy Harvey. We'll see you on the next one.